Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
A very good evening and welcome to yet another interesting episode of Beyond Governance here at 101.9 Hi FM. My name is Nimrod Upambele. It is always a pleasure to be sharing this space and time with you as we engage in thought-provoking conversations on issues related to governance, international relations, and most importantly, leadership, because leadership is a theme that cuts across these issues. In tonight's show, we truly have a very nice lineup. I've got two distinguished guests bringing unique perspective to our conversation. In the first half of the show, I'll be speaking to Dr. Theo Diachel, who is a former president of World Farm Organization. The central theme to our conversation is going to be the impending U.S. Sanctions based on reciprocal tariffs on aluminum and steel, but most importantly, the position that Donald Trump has advanced towards African community by giving them a refugee status. That's going to be the first bit. On our second bit, I'll be joined by the former chief of staff at Metro Police Station, Metro Police Department, MPD, as we shift gears. And we're talking about the ethics and ethical leadership within the South African police services. I mean, we all know that governance, it's a real challenge when it comes to policing. And obviously, our men and women in blue from time to time are being challenged in terms of public perception. The perception is not that great there, but we obviously have to recognize pockets of excellence that are seen, because it's very tough to be a police officer in this country. The crime is at its highest. So we'll get to hear from David Tembe in terms of what has been his experience in law enforcement and an extent to which in his tenure as the chief, there's been confidence in policing. Anyway, before we get in, those are two big ticket items that we'll be driving tonight. Beg your pardon. Before we get into the gist of our conversation, allow me to thank Michael McKenna, who just left a second ago, together with his Overdrive team. They've done a stunning work. They're back on your radio tomorrow at the same time, so do stay tuned. Moving along, let me express my sincere gratitude once again to Betsy, who's the coordinator of the show, as well as Craig on the controller. Thank you very much. These folks are doing stunning work in navigating the show, much to your delight. So moving on swiftly, if you miss any of the previous show, not to worry. Last week we had a very beautiful conversation with the former Premier of Northwest, Professor Job Mokgoro, who gives us very good insights as we were reflecting on the State of the Nation address. In my view, Prof did not disappoint. I mean, he gave us very fresh perspective on some of the very pertinent issues the president touched or did not touch. We're talking health, we're talking safety, we're talking unemployment, you know, your typical big ticket items. So if you've got any views to share or any insights, download the website, look at the podcast, and share your views with us. And of course, in tonight's show, I implore you, as I've already indicated, I'll be joined by Dr. Theo Diachel, in a minute. So I'm sure they will have a lot of questions, because the Africana issue is dominating the public discourse. He's got a position to eliminate us further. Our WhatsApp line is 0618915109. And of course, your thoughts and views are most welcome via my X handle, which is _@DrTembele. Without any waste of time, let me take this opportunity to welcome Dr. Theo. Once again, Doc, welcome to Beyond Governance. Thank you for gracing the waiver.
Thank you so much for having invited me to your platform. It's a real privilege to share it.
No, the pleasure is certainly ours. We're living in a very interesting time in this country. Doc, if you don't mind, perhaps maybe as a starting point, give us your overview of race relations in South Africa, particularly in the context of the redress agenda encounter. And perhaps maybe the most biggest one is, what are the implications for the country in terms of investor confidence moving forward?
I'm no political scientist, I'm no expert on politics. I'm a farmer, but I've spent a lifetime organizing farmers. And in South Africa, it is quite a challenge. It's a very independent constituency across the board. I'm representing at this moment family farmers in our network for family farmers side. And you must understand that a family farmer is not big or small or rich or poor or black or white or a newcomer to the industry or a well-established enterprise. It's a family that makes a living from the soils. And by their very nature, no matter where in South Africa you'll find them, no matter what language that family speaks, they are mostly on the more conservative side of society. Not necessarily politically conservative, often that too. Not necessarily conservative in terms of religious values, very often that too. Farmers are conservative in terms of family values, because a family on the farm is a closer knit structure. And it is in this context that we must interpret the turmoil in which Donald Trump has thrown us in. Now, in our organization, we try to keep track of the youngsters who every year travel to the USA and Ireland to work there on farms. Around 2,000 of them to the UK, and about, well, this year we will have 16,200 traveling to the USA, and there they work on very big machines. The latest technology, especially digital technologies, and they come back with a lot of experience and new knowledge, but also with some dollars in their pocket to launch a new career. And we are holding our hearts for those opportunities to remain open. Not only that, we benefit immensely from Agua, especially as farmers. Our wine, our macadamias, our delicious fruits, and even our dairy industry has a lot of benefits from the trade agreement under Agua, and we don't want that to disappear. We will most certainly lose a lot of jobs if that would disappear. Hence, our challenge was to communicate to Donald Trump and his inner circle that this can never be a black and white thing in South Africa. Black farmers are suffering even more under a policy environment which is not conducive to the creation of a new class of profitable farmers, because they don't own the land which they got through land reform, so they don't have collateral to offer at the bank. They cannot access financing. Some of our members in the Highveld region only received their inputs for this year last week. You know, it's way too late for them to plant anything now. And we have pleaded with him not to punish the whole of South Africa if he's irritated with the policymakers, rather to focus on what irritates him and engage with those who can really make the difference. But most important for us is that the world became a very small place for us as farmers. Every farmer is every day in competition with the best other farmers in the world. And foodstuffs and fiber and fuel, that flows across our borders, especially in our nick of the woods in Southern Africa, as if it doesn't exist. But then also came this invitation to Afrikaner farmers in what he said, and later on to minority groups in what he wrote, to have refugee status in the USA. Now, we don't think, and I will put my neck on it, we don't think that many successful farmers or any successful farmers will pack up and go. But we have received quite a lot of interest from families who have reached the end of the road, who simply see no future for them yet, who have lost jobs and so, and now they see this as a way out. a new livelihood. But also some of those youngsters who have worked in the USA, most of the interest we have received from our members in Zimbabwe. We are by far the biggest voice for farmers in Zimbabwe too. Not only white farmers who lost the land, but also farmers from Matabele land, who 15 years prior to the fast track land reform program in Zimbabwe also lost land and cattle and family structures and so. And many of those farmers said, if only I had that opportunity for Zimbabweans too, I would have grabbed it. There was this one particular guy, I know him well, he's around 50 years old, and he said, I farmed with my dad for 4 years before they took our land in Zimbabwe, and I've been waiting now for 25 years for something to happen, and nothing happened, and it is a lifetime, a generation has gone by, but I think I might have another 15 or 20 years of farming in me, and if I had that opportunity, of course, I would grab him, and can't you just whisper in the ear of Donald Trump that he must extend this opportunity to us too? So we also don't think, like some of the other farmers or other organizations who claim to be a voice for farmers, to say that we should shut that door and those opportunities is worthless. There are people who are putting a lot of hope on new opportunities elsewhere.
Those are very interesting observations that you've just shared with us, particularly around AGOA, which you've correctly acknowledged it is important. And Afrikaner community, being farmers in the main, will stand to lose significantly around AGOA. But I just also want to unpack the 16,000 farmers that you made reference to, and as well as farmers that you represent across the racial lines, which is a very interesting line of thought, because of course these are some of the issues that we aren't, majority of people aren't aware of, and we need to speak more and more about. Let's do that immediately after this short break.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Welcome back. This is Beyond Governance. My name is Nimrod Mbeli. If you've just joined us, we're having a very interesting and thought-provoking conversation, as you normally do on this show. I'm joined by Dr. Theo Diacher, who is a former president of Farmers, Farmers Organization. Before we took that break, very interesting insights that he shared with us. First and foremost is that the Afrikaner as an independent constituency, that's the word they use, independent constituency, across the racial line, are more driven by family values in the main, because that what dictate how they work. He also gave us a sense of impending threat in an event Donald Trump imposed harsher sanctions towards South Africa. The case in point is the AGOA, which benefits both the automotive sector as well as farming or wines. We export beautiful wines in South Africa. We export a lot of fruits. Those big ticket items are literally being threatened in an event that South Africa is expelled from AGOA, but of which we hope that that's not going to be the case, because a lot of jobs, I mean, we've got the highest jobs, and we've got the highest rate of unemployment in this country, and this will further deepen South Africa's chaos more and more. But to my good doctor's point is that the idea is not to punish every South African. The idea is more targeted. So could you just clarify for us, Theo, what is your take of targeted approach towards those that are found wanting from the perspective of Afrikaners?
I identify as an Afrikaner farmer, and I was made from this soil. And I had the privilege to also serve as president of our Southern African Confederation of Agricultural Unions for 7 years, and also as president of the Pan-African Farmers Organization for 5 years. I had the opportunity to really travel this continent extensively, not to capital cities only. I went to farms. I, I shook hands with the farmers themselves. I saw what their aspirations and their challenges are. And man, I can tell you from what I've seen, we have really blessed with paradise. This continent has everything that money cannot buy. The soils, the average climate. We are right in the middle of the planet. Half of it is in the north and half of it is in the south. The water resources. We sit in South Africa on the third driest country south of the Sahara. And look at the competitiveness under these conditions. But then, there are things which we grapple to get it right. Stuff like, for example, the traceability of our livestock, biosecurity when it comes to animal-based proteins, stuff which is really not rocket science. I mean, Botswana is doing way better than us. Namibians have kicked dust in our eyes simply by the way they manage their biosecurity, by simple governance measures and discipline. And if they can do it, surely in South Africa, we can do better. There's no more political correct way to say this. I firmly believe, I believe with every cell in my body, that the biggest challenge of our generation, me and you, is poverty and hunger. Here in Africa, we know the ugliest face of poverty. And if we don't slay that dragon in our lifetime, the next generation will probably always be too late to try to do so. But there is only one way to beat poverty, and that is by creating wealth. There's only one way to beat poverty, and that is by creating wealth. And there's no sector of our economy, not in South Africa, not in Southern Africa, not on our continent, that can create more wealth on a broader basis and sooner than agriculture can. Because you can do it in your backyard, you can do it on a pavement, you can do it on open spaces around our cities. What to say in this wonderful, underutilized soil we have.
Can I take
all
you
over
on,
our country?
On the very same point, Theo. The refugee status would certainly undermine the very same value system that you are echoing now. And to what extent are Afrikaners taking Trump offer, to relocate to the U.S. and bearing in mind that the U.S. is not it's quite hostile to foreigners. We've seen it, and these are some of the questions that Afrikaners or even South Africans in general asking themselves. Afrikaners pride themselves on culture. And if you're migrating to the U.S., how are you preserving or contemplating to preserve Afrikaners' culture in a predominantly, if not exclusively, English environment? So those are some of the issues that everybody asks themselves. And personally, you might share your thoughts on that.
The only people we know of so far, the only people who registered with us or in our liaison with the USA Embassy are families who really feel that they've reached the end of the road, who do not have a job or a livelihood, who do not see for themselves any future in South Africa because of that, for economic reasons. And who have really fallen into poverty. And they see this as an opportunity. So the question would be, can those opportunities be created for them here? Well, personally, my answer to it was, it must be created here too. But it is not being created over the last few years, and it will probably not be created until we embark on a policy drive that is more friendly towards investment. Because you must understand, just like on farms, it is also true elsewhere in the economy, that you can only grow jobs if you grow business. You will only grow business if you can lure investors. investors who bring capital into the country. And capital is as shy as a kudu. If you scare it, it runs.
Absolutely.
It simply does not make sense that you say, come in, invest in our country, bring your capital, build your factories, but we might expropriate you at nil compensation if we deem it in public interest. The average investor will say, I'm not going to take that chance.
Well, that's a very interesting side. I just want to quickly, because we're running out of time, there's one point that I think you and I need to have a follow-up conversation, because there's just so many issues that are of public interest from the perspective of Afrikaner, and to share your thoughts with the rest of the South Africa. We're going to have to follow up on that. But here's another biggest issue that from time to time we pick up from media, that farmers, we've got porous borders in South Africa. We've got a lot of Zimbabweans, Mozambicans, flooding into our communities. And most of these folks find employ in farms. And there's issues around, farm murderers, the killing. And the question which we often grapple with is if the farmers employ, foreigners next to nothing, so we are told, And how are we going to, what is the role of Afrikaners in preserving and pushing border control so that not every single person come here who is not documented? And, farmers, not only Afrikaners, but pretty much all farmers should not find in their wisdom to employ undocumented folks, because if something happens, these folks can disappear, as they often do, without a trace. Your perspective on that?
I feel it's a bit unfair to single out the farming sector for employing foreigners. When I come to the city and I go to restaurants, it's interesting for me to see how many people serving you are not from around here. I farm in the northernmost areas of our country. I'm not far from the Zimbabwean border, and I'm not far from the Mozambican border. And every day, foreigners would come by. But the mere fact that we have a crisis with security on farms, the sensitivities around farm attacks, theft on farms, and of course, farm murders, scares farmers away from employing people or even letting people on their farms who are not traceable. Remember, a vast majority of farmers are very actively involved in security. We have farm watches. We call each other on the radio a few times a day. We patrol our areas. So farmers also, there's a lot of peer group pressure. They watch each other. I cannot allow my neighbor to let go of his alertness, because it will also endanger me. But then there's the other side of the story too. We have, of what we know, around 4,800 South African farmers and Zimbabwean farmers who are farming in 44 countries on this continent, and very few of them have pulled up their roots in South Africa. They have kind of diversified. A good 1,600 of them are in Mozambique, and about 1,200 of them are in Zambia. But then they are spread across West Africa, Central Africa. There are a growing number of them in Congo, DR. The oldest group or the longest serving group elsewhere is in Nigeria and in Congo, Brazzaville. And lately, there's a lot of farmers investing in land-based enterprises in Angola. So farmers are grabbing the opportunity to go elsewhere on the continent too, to spread their risk, to diversify. And by doing that, I think farmers made a lot of friends elsewhere too. I took in a few students on my farm whom I've met in Congo. And I took them in for practical experience for 6 months. And man, they are a huge asset. Young people with stars in their eyes to become competitive farmers, something which I wish we had more of, or we saw more in the public eye in South Africa. I'm aching to see the brightest young minds from black schools stepping forward and saying, I want to be a farmer. Because somehow we inherited this image that one should not aspire to be a farmer, that it is a kind of a backward profession.
And which is not so true. But, you know, Dr. Diacher, unfortunately, we have run out of time. And I've just said to my producer, I'll certainly make a follow-up with you, because there's just so much that it's fresh and illuminating from where you're sitting. And, of course, there are a lot of controversial issues that you and I, as well as South Africa, needs to confront in a manner that brings mutual understanding, because dialogue is the best instrument that could address, you know, different perspectives and different views, particularly around the land issue. We're going to have to leave it here, unfortunately, because we're out of time. Once again, thank you so much for gracing Beyond Governance with your time. It has been absolutely beautiful. But you'll certainly take my call when I call you back in the nearest future. Thank you very much. That was a very interesting conversation that I've just had with Dr. Theo Diacher, who's the former president of a farmers organization, and giving us really snippets on some of the issues that farmers, not only just Afrikaners, but farmers across the racial spectrum are actually going through. And their petition to Donald Trump, interestingly, the entire grouping, as I, you know, interpret his posture, they are, you know, Afrikaners obviously are not a homogenous community. They are quite diverse. There are those, obviously, to his words, that have reached the end of the road and who want to take up an opportunity in the U.S. And there are those, in his view, that those opportunities that are being promised in the U.S. can be created in South Africa by looking at the policy environment. So those are very interesting observations that we have picked up with Dr. Diacher.